All right, good morning, everybody. Appreciate you joining us. And as you see on the screen, we have Sarah and John joining us from Keystone Technologies. And the benefits advisor that they work with is Adam Berkowitz. They're all in the St. Louis area. And one of the things I'm excited about is a lot of times we'll get asked, because we might have one of these webinars or maybe an event, one of our summits or something like that. And it might be an employer that we're talking about that's got 200 or 700 people or even thousands of employees. And some people are like, well, you know, we're less than 50 employees. You know, what can we do? Our hands tied. That's also a cutoff with the Affordable Care Act. And so I'm always excited to share stories like this. We even shared our own. We're, you know, our own organization, we're a whopping 7 employees. We're able to do things that, keep our costs under control and deliver great benefits. So Sarah and John will talk a little bit about their organization and a little of the background and give you a sense of that. But I think is most of the employment in America is in businesses of this size. So it's great to hear from them. Appreciate them being willing to share their story. So maybe Sarah and John, if you could just give a little background on sort of your organization and number of employees and maybe just a little of the backstory, and then we'll kind of get into it a little bit more.
So we're Keystone Technologies. We are a small IT consulting company. We are currently located in Eureka, Missouri, which is just outside of St. Louis. What else?
We've been around for a number of years, and we've gone through a couple of different transitions over the years. And we currently have about 35 employees, and we've worked with Adam on designing this new benefits. This is our second year with these types of benefits, which is fantastic. Yeah, and we are an IT company. We do work mainly here in the St. Louis area, but we do have additional clients all across the country that we work with too. So,
yeah,
great.
And also being smaller, we definitely felt like we had a little less control in the health insurance market with what we could do for our employees. We try to be a very employee centered company and put a lot of stock in our employees, and we want to help them, you know, have the best options available that we can provide. And again, felt like we were a little bit limited being small, and we kind of learned differently, and I feel like we're doing a lot better now, and we're excited with the path that we're on.
And Adam, maybe you share a little of your perspective of, it sounds like you've worked with Keystone for on and off for some years. And so maybe describe kind of from the consultant side, sort of the dynamic and a bit of the details on the sort of plan they've had over the years and you know, how that's the same or different today.
Sure. So I worked with Keystone in my past life before we started Simpara. I believe we built your first plan, guys, when you had like 3 employees.
Yeah, I think you did too.
And quickly grew in headcount over the next 12, 24 months. But it was very traditional, fully insured plan. The strategies that we deployed, shopping the major, large insurance companies every single year, UnitedHealthcare, Aetna, Cigna, back and forth, trying to combat increases. But over time, deductibles ticked up. You guys were facing $5,000 deductible. When we re-engaged, you were also facing a 55% increase when we re-engaged. And so it was time to see what else was out there. And that's when we started this journey and we're able to put you guys on a much more sustainable path. You now are on a self-funded plan, and we'll talk more about that. And employees, I mean, you talked about how engaged your employees are, and I think that is absolutely the case. You are such a unique organization in how you engage the employees and get them to be a part of these conversations. And when we started going down this path, it was very new. It's very different. And you opened the doors. If anybody wants to be a part of these conversations, please come in. And there were a lot of takers, still are today. And I think that speaks volumes to what you guys are as an organization. And it also, I think, has enabled the success that you all have had over the last 2 years doing this. So,
Wow, 55% increase. So had the company had a project at Chernobyl or something? Did everybody have some big health issue? I mean, what was the explanation for that?
Honestly, I really don't know what it was. It just seemed like every year, you know, we had very little visibility as to who was doing what. We felt like we were a pretty healthy organization, and there was really no way. And every year they'd come back and say, hey, your health insurance is going to increase this much, and we'd have a heart attack. And then we'd try to figure out the best way to handle this and how we were going to afford it, how the employees are going to be able to afford it. And it was very stressful every single year. So, I really don't know exactly what was causing the great big and huge increases, but it was definitely stressful.
Yeah. And was the, Adam, from your vantage point, you'd kind of seen the various carriers kind of had the same basic story. So it required a different path. Is that the idea?
Yeah. I mean, when we got that news, of course, the first question to the incumbent carrier, and I see the question here, who's the carrier, was Aetna, but I don't think we need to pick on them. I think this could have been any of the large insurance companies. You know, they said, well, your loss ratio is high. It's 162%. So for those that don't speak our insurance language, for every dollar that Keystone was spending, giving to Aetna, paying in premium, the plan was paying out $1.62. So the plan was upside down. And, you know, I think the common, there's no data to back that up. All give us was a loss ratio number, but they couldn't divulge the data. They like to hide behind HIPAA and other protocols. So we did our own analysis. We said, well, let's see if that's the case, and let's look at how much healthcare we're actually consuming, and let's take this thing to market and see if we can find something that's much more sustainable and much more transparent. I think at the end of the day, transparency is what has really led to the success of this plan. You know, and I remember when we told the incumbent carrier that we were going self-insured, they were, I mean, like fell out of their chair. You can't do that. The risk is too high. The plan's going to blow up. And you know, the reality is our trend is going down in year two. Costs are going down. And so this idea that the claims are the claims and there's nothing you can do about them is just absolutely false. We've been very hands-on with actively managing the claims, and that's allowed us to move into a much more affordable policy.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that I will mention is it's really only risky if you have somebody who doesn't know how to do those things. And, you know, as one of Adam's counterparts often says, is the only way to pay less for healthcare is to pay less for healthcare. And, you know, one of the probably the most surprising chapters that I've gotten reaction from my book is that in the real market, prices are flat in healthcare, and the real market is defined by the rapidly growing and quite large cash pay market and direct contract market, where employers are direct contracting with healthcare provider organizations. And because of the explosion of high deductibles over the last decade, that real market is substantial. And so we've got a bunch of data in the book that sort of goes into that. And certainly if you ask doctors and nurses, are you getting paid fundamentally different than you were 10, 20 years ago? The answer is no. And you know, the reality is healthcare isn't expensive. What's expensive is profiteering and price gouging. And so if you are aware of that, there's methods. So, Adam, and maybe you just shed a little bit more light on the type of plan that they have. Is this level funded? Is it, you know, is it a carrier TPA? Are there things they're doing with primary care or networks, or just a few of the little mechanics of it?
You got it. And we call this an unbundled plan. So when you look at the components that make up a traditional health insurance policy, you have insurance in place to protect against unknown risk. You've got a network. You've got pharmacy benefit manager, and then you've got, you know, a TPA, a third-party administrator, who's actually managing the claims, paying the claims. So we've, you know, in a traditional sense, if you think of, when I hear level funded, I think of like, okay, United Healthcare has level funded, Aetna has level funded, but we've unbundled these components. We have an independent third-party administrator. The company's name is Entrust. We have stop-loss that we were able to secure. We have a pharmacy benefit manager. So we've put all these components together. From a financing perspective, we have built what I would call a level funded plan. It's like budget billing with your electric utility. So it keeps Keystone's premiums, you know, from a budget perspective, fixed every month, and allows a small company to have predictive costs. But at the end of the year, of course, if they've spent less in claims than what's been paid in, they get the difference back. The full surplus is returned. And in this environment, you have full transparency and control over all of those levers. And a really good example of that is, you know, the first TPA we went with last year turned out not to be a great partner. And so we were able to swap that component out without having any disruption to the plan, because the benefits stayed the same. We actually made them better, but the employees didn't notice this huge impact, like if you were switching, say, Anthem to United. You have to look at the doctor list and all that stuff. So it's much more flexible in this type of environment. Does that help, Dave?
Yeah, and you know, I'd imagine a webinar where there's more small business, some people may not be real familiar with stop loss. So, you know, what if, you know, they're a company of 30 people and suddenly they got 5 cancer cases, or there's, you know, a preemie baby, or, you know, how do you protect against the company getting bankrupted by some shock claim?
That's it. And that's what stop loss is. So we have two forms of stop loss or reinsurance, which is an aggregate policy and an individual, like a high deductible plan. And so with this fixed, like budget billing type of plan, we're funding to the max liability. A shock claim could happen, absolutely. And we have insurance in place for that. So Keystone will never be on the hook for more than what they're paying in each month in this type of environment. That's the type of protection we can provide. So it looks and feels and walks and talks like what they've always known from a fully insured plan. There's obviously a few more contracts involved that you guys had to get used to reviewing and signing. And employee education was more in depth. But at the end of the day, it's going to walk and talk and feel like what they've always had.
Yeah, I mean, one of the mindset shifts that I've seen is companies realizing while they were, you know, fully insured before, the reality is they were self-insured, you know, just they're already carrying the risk. I can guarantee you if you have bad claims years, and again, we know some of those reasons are not good reasons why those costs go up, that they will claw back that money. So you are not, you know, in some 10-year deal where you're never going to see any rate increases if you happen to have a you know, whatever, triplet hemophiliacs or, you know, whatever. And so that's really good background. So thanks. And Sarah and John, let's talk a little bit about sort of the organizational piece of it. Obviously this isn't just your standard, you know, well-known logo on the back of a card. And you know, certainly you weren't happy with those increases that you were seeing, but how did you kind of manage the organization, the senior management, the employees? Maybe talk a little bit about that process, because from my experience, the nuts and bolts are straightforward once there's education. If there's going to be things where they fall down, it's really more around the organizational side of it.
So as we got everybody started, you know, we were learning along with them. We had no idea how this type of insurance product worked. Adam was fantastic at explaining, going through, you know, step by step with our benefits team that we have over here, that were, you know, just us, John and I, and then some of our employees who were interested in helping out with this. And we had a number of meetings. He kind of explained how all this was going to work. As we got a little closer and we decided that, yes, this was the way we were going to move forward with our plans, we just started sending out employee communication. We're a heavy email company, I would say. So we sent a lot of emails. We also, for those who work in the Eureka office, we had posters up on the walls kind of explaining some of the individual portions of this. We had Adam come in and do a big employee meeting, which we recorded and then put out on our intranet for the employees who are out of town so they could watch on their own time. We have an employee retreat once a year. So we brought this all up at the employee retreat and did another presentation on how the different components of the plan worked. We have spouse emails, so we sent out a spouse email chain, kind of went through it with that. So we just tried to make sure we were hitting as many different avenues as possible to make sure that people really felt like they were informed and they knew how this was going to work and what effect this would have on them and their personal families and decision-making processes.
Yeah. One of the challenges here is, is like we, you know, particularly once you're educated, you may know that this is a better story, but, you know, frankly, for probably the last 20 years, for most people, when they hear benefits change, it's, you know, great news. You're going to pay more and get less. That's what people are used to hearing when you talk about benefits change, and people try to, you know, polish that up as much as they can. But at the end of the day, paying less and getting more, I mean, paying more and getting less, rather, doesn't sound too exciting. So did you have some pushback and some skepticism or angry people or any of that type of dynamic?
The biggest thing that I can think of as far as that was really the employees were mainly concerned about the network. So were they going to be able to see their doctor, or were they going to have to change? And we didn't see that change. We were able to choose the network with Adam's help. And really, I don't think anybody had any change as far as their doctors or their providers were concerned, because that's what everybody was concerned about. You know, am I going to be able to see my doctor? I'm comfortable with them. I know who they are. Can I still go see them?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And what are, in terms of the how the network is managed, Adam, what are sort of the mechanics of that? Is that a network you rent? Is that direct contracts? Is that reference-based pricing? I mean, there's different avenues people take there.
Oh, good question. We actually explored two different paths initially. One was reference-based pricing, but we felt that that was too much of a whale to chew off in this first transition. So we are renting a PPO network. It's in the first year we were renting a local network with a national wrap because Keystone has employees in a few different states, and it worked really well. We changed our network this past year. We have some rural employees, and so we're just trying to find the right fit. But we're leasing these networks. These are more or less what I would call like a high performing PPO, if there is such of a thing. I mean, we're still not getting the level of transparency you would with reference based pricing, but it is providing, you know, relatively fair pricing compared to your national PPOs. So we lease these networks. We also have different programs where employees can leverage radiology services, MRIs, CT scans, PET scans. There's surgeries if they need elective surgeries or procedures like colonoscopies where we have contracts in place nationwide. Employees just contact our concierge, and we have transparent upfront fixed pricing for all of these procedures, and through some steerage, employees can get those services for free. So we are building in incentives to the plan to get employees to be more active consumers, pay less, you know, at the point of care, and reward them for doing that.
You hit on a couple of things. If you can expand on either John and Sarah or Adam, the concierge. So how does the concierge, who's the concierge in terms of, you don't have to get in a specific organization, but is that somebody on Adam's staff? Is that somebody at Keystone? Is that a third party? And then when you say you provide some incentives for employees, and I tend to sum it up, a lot of these benefits is you make wise decisions free or near free for the employee, and bad decisions expensive. Most people can grok that without being healthcare wonks. So maybe speak to those two things, the concierge piece, whether it's third party, as well as what incentives for the employees, if you've reduced the cost, or that's something that they benefit from, the company, how does that work?
You guys want to take it? Sarah?
well, let's see. Do you want to talk about the concierge service part of it, and then I'll take the next section?
Sure. So, I mean, it is an outsourced service. We're not doing this in-house. We have a few different key partners that we've put together on the surgical component, the radiology component, and we also have a medication component as well. And it's a phone number that employees call. It's an email address that they can use, and it connects them to nurses where they can help guide them to these contracts that we have in place, find out what the diagnosis is or what the medication they're on, look through our plan and find these high performing components to help steer them to those areas. So so that's kind of the setup of it. And Sarah can talk about the incentive structure.
Yeah, so as far as incentives, Adam mentioned a little bit before, we do have where if they're having certain services done, if they go through and they call the card and talk to the specialist, they can do this at no cost to them. So they don't have anything out of pocket for a copay. We've also got a mail order prescription benefit service too, where if they're on a medication that's on the list, they can get that prescription at no cost. So it definitely helps both us because we're saving money with them going these specific avenues, and then they're saving money by not having monthly costs or copays or things like that. So it is definitely win-win, and the people who have had to take advantage of these things have come back and just raved about how exciting it is not to have to worry about this cost in addition to what they're already dealing with. So it's been a really good benefit.
Yeah. And I'll add a little bit more color, Dave. I mean, for the folks that may be on this call that are on a fully insured plan, this is a new concept. And so the idea is, back to what you said earlier, if we're going to pay less for healthcare, we have to pay less for healthcare. So through these contracts, we're getting, you know, colonoscopies for maybe $1,500 versus $5,000 under our PPO plan. Or we're getting medications for a couple hundred dollars versus quite a few thousands of dollars. And so because Keystone is self-insured, they're paying the claim either way. It's built into this balanced premium that we've built. And so if we can hedge that cost, if we can arbitrage that cost, we want to award employees for doing that, and we want to encourage it. And so providing transparency, providing these tools is great. I think our experience is we need to provide that skin in the game for employees to say, okay, when you do this, it's free. And we want you to do these things because we're all in this together.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things, you know, earlier in my career, I worked with, consulting of a different type and technology, including working with hospital organizations and physician offices on sort of how they manage their insurance contracts and payment. And what a lot of people aren't aware of is, can be challenging for docs is, you know, a doc literally may have to pay 700 different providers in a given month. 700 different insurance products. So they're pretty used to working with different avenues. So this isn't, you know, it's not like they only have, you know, the local Blue Cross and the three or four national carriers. I mean, they will have lots. So they're used to that. Once it's in place, it's straightforward. And naturally, they're going to want to check for eligibility, make sure they get paid. But this is a pretty straightforward thing for them. And sometimes people are quite surprised when some of, you know, the example of colonoscopy, like you can do that in a number of different settings. If you like paying four or five times the same for the same procedure, you know, you have that option, you know, but most people don't want, you know, same doctor, different settings, you can pay. I mean, it's sometimes five or even 10 times more at some of these organizations. And so, you know, that's been pretty eye-opening for people. But, you know, in my experience, whatever in life, whether it's, you know, work or it's relationships or it's sports, anything that I've had success on or I've observed success on, there's challenges along the way, you know, and we're certainly not saying that it's unicorns and rainbows, you know, every day. Now, the good news is, you know, good news is health insurance companies have the lowest net promoter score of any industry, lower than cable companies and airlines. So it's not like that's this unbelievably, amazingly fun experience for people. But there's going to be challenges anytime you do change. Like, what have been some of the hiccups or, you know, issues you've had to kind of work through, or, you know, once you got into implementation, it's like, oh, who knew this? You know, I mean, there's going to be those things. So maybe if you can each share an example or two that you think would be illustrative for other people.
I think that one of the challenges that we faced at the beginning was we started out thinking, okay, we're unbundling, so we're going to offer all these services to our employees, and everything was separate. Like, we had this company that you called for this. We had this company that you talked to for this. Like, everything was in separate pieces. And I think it was difficult for employees to manage. It was, you know, it was new to us and it was new to them. And if we expected somebody when they're in a stressful situation, like they're at the doctor's and they know that they're going to have a test run, to think, oh, I have to call this other number to find out if I qualify for the lesser cost option, or, you know, that kind of thing. So I think that we just had too many moving parts at the very beginning. We tried our best to have, you know, meetings and reminders and emails and all these things to keep telling people what the different things did. But I think that some employees took advantage of it, and other ones were like, ah, I'm just going to give them my insurance card and go to the doctor, and that's all I'm going to do. So this year, with our moving into our second year, we worked with Adam. We found a different third-party administrator that we've so far been more happy with. They're a little more transparent, but they've got it all kind of together in one place. So if the employee has an issue, they just call one number. There's just one card to keep, and everything's kind of all just streamlined and more simple. So we're hoping to have a little more success with everybody using this year and being able to take advantage of all the different options that are available.
Yeah, to try and make it as easy as possible for our employees and their families to use was important, because, you know, traditionally, you know, 6, 7, 8 years ago, or even 2 years ago, it was you went to the doctor and whatever the doctor said you needed to do, that's what you did. You didn't think about the next part of, okay, well, what is it going to cost? Where am I going to get it done? Anything like that. So we've had to kind of educate our employees that, hey, just because the doctor recommends that you have this test done at this hospital, you don't have to have it there. You can call this number, talk to them about it. They will recommend places where you can get it done at a lower cost. It's the same test. The doctor gets the results. They can review it with you. So.
Yeah. One analogy, you know, it's probably apropos given that you're a technology company, is, you know, for those of us old enough to remember Big Blue, IBM, right? There was once a time where, you know, if you had computing, you pretty much got it all top to bottom from one company, you know, Big Blue. You know, there was some simplicity to that for sure. You had one throat to choke if there was a problem. And, you know, but it was really expensive. And it was also not consumer friendly at all. And then you saw Microsoft and Intel start to break it up, and then open source software. And with that came some increased demands on IT departments and consulting firms like Keystone Technologies. But also, you know, I don't think a lot of people were clamoring to get back to IBM mainframes either. I mean, there's a whole bunch of other capabilities that were brought to bear. In a lot of ways, that's kind of what's going on, is now there's tools to kind of, given this unbundled environment where, you know, it's no longer everything from a monolithic, you know, Big Blue type organization, you know, you need to bring it together. And there's a lot of creative, there's some technology solutions, there's concierge solutions. Some organizations, you know, as they get a little bit bigger, are even having a dedicated person on staff that is kind of that member champion. And so there's a number of different models that are emerging there. You know, one thing we didn't talk about was maybe this, we're kind of, you know, what do they call it, burying the lead. So we were going to see a 55% increase. That's pretty staggering. So did you get it down to like a 44% decrease, or how did that all shake out?
Adam, do you remember what the percentage was on that? I know it was less, but I don't remember exactly what the number was.
we didn't keep costs flat. It was probably like a 12% increase from the prior year. So, you know, we mitigated, you know, almost 40% of that increase. And Keystone, is an employer, took on almost all of that increase so they could keep employee costs flat. And knowing that this environment, since we're funding to the maximum liability, your costs are going to be higher. So in a self-funded environment, actuaries will tell us where they expect our claims to hit and your maximum attachment point. And so funding at that maximum point makes the plan a little bit more expensive up front. Now, the good news is Keystone has a surplus. And so you guys, we're only a few weeks away from you guys getting that check in the mail. And, that's going right back into the company. And it's also why our costs are going down 6% in year two. So now we're on a track where I'd say overall costs, we've seen like a 25% decrease over the last 2 years. It's been impressive.
Wow. Last I heard, in the last year, the the big carriers haven't said, okay, yeah, we're going to reduce premiums. And you know, in fairness to them, they're good people. I understand they're doing rational things within an irrational set of requirements. But you know, I've written about this as a factual thing. They are legally bound because of shareholder fiduciary to facilitate price gouging by hospitals and PBMs, because they tell the street they're going to increase earnings 15% every year. So there's a whole very sophisticated process to present that there's this fictitious medical trend that you hear about, that there's a lot of ways to sort of trump up numbers on that. In reality, again, as I said earlier, ask nurses and doctors, are they getting paid 55% more than last year? Not many that I've ever met. And around that, I mean, you talked about they kind of fell out of your chair. Have there been any other, you know, that, again, use a technology thing, you know, one of the ways to freeze status quo is to use fear, uncertainty, and doubt, you know, and I saw that having been in the industry, and that happens in health benefits too. So were there particular things that that were sort of getting chattered into, and maybe that was buffered, you know, from Adam because he was the interface, but what were the sort of doom and gloom, you know, scenarios that you were being told to, like, oh, you can't do this, or, you know, whatever? Is there any color you can add on that?
So I remember specifically a conversation we had with our old provider when we started talking about moving to a self-insured type of plan. And they really, really put the fear in that it is going to end up costing you more. Be careful, you know, because on the surface, it looks like it's a great deal. But you're going to end up paying more when you start using the insurance. And I think Adam did a wonderful job on getting us that stop loss insurance. So that, and then we max fund it. So we are paying what our cost is. Mm-hmm. It's not going to be more, which is great, which has reduced our risk and has allowed us on, you know, a finance side, to really budget, and know what our cash outflow is each month, which is important for us.
Yeah. No, it's important. I think people recognize that are newer in this education process that there are thousands of companies, you know, doing this. I've written about a lot of them. The longest one that I've written about, they've been doing it for 25 years. And typically what you see happen is, year one, you know, there'll be some drop in spending, and it depends on how aggressive the company is. I mean, I know some that are just rip off the Band-Aid, and they go all in. They're direct primary care, they're direct contracting, they're using an ethical PBM and so on. And some people, you know, that's culturally, that can make sense for them. So they might see a bigger drop than somebody else who's taken some of those steps, but not all those steps. And then once that kind of settles out over the first 2 or 3 years, then costs pretty much level out. Maybe they'll tick up a little bit just with regular inflation. But what happens is, you know, because the rest of the market has this fictitious medical trend, you know, there ends up being a delta. And so, you know, you're, one, they might be spending 10% less than their peers over time. Case of Rosen Hotels, which is the subject of my TED Talk, you know, they're spending 55% less per capita on health benefits. They've been doing this 25 years. They have the best benefits package I've heard of any company in the country. And, you know, I was at Microsoft during their heyday when you didn't pay a dime for anything. It's significantly better than that because although Microsoft's very recently done some things on primary care, but they've done some great stuff around primary care that's really helped there. And they're in the most expensive market in the country. Florida's got 40% of the most expensive hospitals in the country. So in spite of that, and, you know, just as one data point of how they have significant disease burden, 56% of their pregnancies are categorized high risk, which can be a budget buster if you don't have the right plan, care plan in place. And so it is kind of shocking for people if they're not so familiar with this, but that's typically what happens. And you know, there's going to be variance in terms of how aggressive organizations are, but it's actually pretty straightforward once you demystify it. I mean, there's not that many moving parts at the end of the day. You need to access doctors, hospitals, drugs, you know, occasionally for the, you know, you may have some complex thing that you may want to send somebody to a center of excellence like Mayo Clinic or Virginia Mason, whatever, but it's pretty straightforward. So what would be, you know, if you were going to share a few bits of advice, you know, what are the things that you know now you wish you knew a year or two ago that you haven't already talked about? And maybe John, Sarah, you can give an example, you know, of something you wish you knew before that you'd like to share with others. And then Adam, maybe you could share an example as well.
Sure. Well, sort of recapping what I've already said, but just making sure that what you're offering are things that are easy to use for your employees, whether it's, you know, everything's bundled under one phone number and they can just call one place, or just making sure that it's things that are actually going to be used amongst, you know, your population. Also researching TPAs, like we had mentioned too, our third party administrator, our first year wasn't the best fit. So I feel like we've got a good one this time. So I think that's definitely helpful. Make sure you're looking at that ahead of time. And then just lots of education for your employees. Make sure you involve families, because it's not just the employee, it may be their spouse, maybe their children are seeing the doctor. So make sure everybody is really aware of all the different things that you're offering and how to access those. Is there anything else to add on that?
Those employee education is a huge thing, especially if you're changing it up on them. So,
yeah. Okay. Adam, anything you wanted to add? Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah. I mean, I say this a lot to my own peers on my side of the table is, I think a lot of what we do is change management. You know, once you understand how these plans work and you build these plans, the hard part is managing the change in the population. And I think, what I've really learned from Keystone is getting employees involved in these conversations very early on is something that I see is often missed. You know, the leadership team takes it and runs with it and then tells the employees what's happening. And I think getting this involvement and buy-in early on so that when the light switch turned on, it wasn't this massive change. People were expecting, it was anticipated, it was talked about, it was debated, you know, we weren't forcing something down other people's throats. They were brought into the conversation of, why is healthcare so expensive? Why do we need to think about doing something different? How is it different? How is it the same? You know, that I think is just a huge testament to the success that you guys have had. And it's something that we take to our other clients as well, is we got to get more buy-in. It can't just be a leadership conversation.
Yeah. Before we segue into some of the questions from the people on the call, we were just talking about employees. Is there an employee story that sticks with you in terms of, you know, kind of the reaction they've had and how it's been, you know, a pleasant surprise to them? Any, you know, without violating HIPAA or anything like that, any particular anecdotes that you could share?
I know I've gotten a number of people just stop in and just let you know how things are going and heard from people that, you know, I was so excited that my prescription was covered under the no pay prescription plan that we have in place. And they went from paying a couple hundred dollars a month in prescriptions to nothing. And so they were super excited about that. Or people who took advantage of the radiological benefits or things like that, and again, paid nothing. Or even just the people who said, hey, I was super thrilled that we switched to this new plan. I was a little bit nervous about it, but I haven't felt any change at all. Everything felt the same to me. I've used the same doctors. My copays are about the same. So it was a win for them just because it didn't feel like it got worse, which is what they were thinking was going to happen. So I guess just a lot of little anecdotal stories. I don't know if there's been any one big thing that's happened in this past year, which is probably a good thing with health insurance. But just, you know, lots of little stories. People are overall very pleased, and we've been pleased on our side of things too. So it's been a great change.
Great. So there's a question, you know, what makes a good or bad TPA? How would you answer that?
Responsive. I feel like, you know, the quicker they can get back to you when you've got questions, especially because you might have an employee that's waiting in the background that's stressed out about something. and when you, you know, you're waiting and waiting and waiting, trying to just get a simple answer, that's frustrating. Also, fairly prompt claims processing is super important. We have, you know, that was one of our maybe biggest frustrations with the one that we had the first year, was just the amount of lag time with processing employee claims for their various health needs. And, you know, they were coming and asking me because things were taking so long. Hey, I still haven't heard how much this is going to cost. And, you know, I had personal experience with that happening with our family on the, under the plan too. So that was just, that was frustrating this past year. And I think, again, we fixed that problem for going forward. But yeah, just make sure you're really looking at who your third party administrator is and what kind of reputation they have.
Great. There's a question, says, are the members able to take advantage of direct contracting or other out of network cash pay arrangements without violating their network agreement? So I'll kind of answer that, and then you can chime in, because it depends a lot on how the plan is set up. So in this case, we heard that they're leasing a network. And there's other situations where a company will actually stay on a carrier network. And even while doing that, what will change is they will start, with like a concierge type of service, they will kind of manage things up front where it's still a provider in the network, but as we were talked about earlier, may direct them to one facility versus another, and as long as it's still in network, or just simply watch the claims. You would be surprised how many claims are paid duplicate, how many errors there are, and again, depending on what's going on. I know one that's, you know, has a Blue Cross network, and this is up in the Northeast, and they have a reward for employees who find mistakes in hospital bills, and that they will pay them 20% of the difference if they find an error in a bill that they were going to pay, and they don't pay it. They will give the employee 20% of that. This is still within a Blue Cross network environment. Well, guess what happened? This is pretty unbelievable, but the an employee had a hospitalization. There was a bill. They saw there was a $200,000 error, and you'd be surprised how common. They're not all that big, but some are. I mean, I regularly hear and see six-figure errors. And so in this case, that was a $200,000 bill that this company, I think they're a little bigger. They're more in the 50 to 100 range. I think maybe 60, 70 employees. They were going to pay that. So this employee, they decided to use this as an educational opportunity. They, did one of those Ed McMahon checks, you know, those giant checks, and presented it to this employee who I think was making $50,000 a year, and they got a $40,000 check. Guess what? The rest of that company became bill checkers pretty quickly. Wow. Most people would do that for a $300 check. And so there's things you can do even before going to something like direct contracting or bundled or reference based. Even within those traditional environments, there's a lot you can do. Of course, we're always nudging people towards, you know, removing value extracting middlemen. But is there anything you would add, either of you, on that in terms of what you can or can't do with the network you have?
Okay. We haven't offered anything like that, although that sounds really intriguing. I'm sure that'd be awesome to get a check like that. But just educating and, you know, talking to our employees, let them know if you have a question, look at your explanation of benefits, look at your bills, contact interest, you know, whoever you need to contact me if you have questions, and we'll try to help you sort this out. So don't just blindly pay if you're not sure that something is correct. So I think that that's been mostly the main thing we've done this year.
Yep.
Just encourage them just to start paying attention to things.
Yeah, it makes a big difference. And, you know, especially in a small firm, people are, you know, there's more collegiality typically, you know, and so there's a question. My company is fully insured now, and our employees just seem to go to urgent care or their doc for all things. Seems like your savings rely on this navigation. How did you get employees to actually use the email and phone numbers concierge versus just going to the PCP and following their orders? And there's also sometimes PCPs in this wacky fee-for-service world, they can be hard to get into. So are there any things that you would add around that dynamic that you could, you know, that would be helpful?
I think that we've just been really upfront with all of our employees from the start, like we mentioned, and explaining how their buy-in helps Keystone save money, which, you know, hopefully they save some money in the meantime, especially if they can take advantage of some of those zero cost options that we do have. But it can also help us when comes time next year for renewal at what our rates are and what we're going to be able to offer them as far as plans and benefits for future. And we've thankfully have just had a really good group of employees, and everybody is invested and just, you know, trying to help us as much as we're trying to help them.
Yeah. And, you know, given the importance of change management, you know, this question is around some of the things you did to make the change management process stick with employees. This questioner says, I feel like this would be the hardest part for my company to do, even if we like the savings. Are there, you know, you had a lot of this upfront end education. What did you do to make sure, and what are you continuing to do to make sure it's really anchored into the culture?
Repetition. we just, like I said, we have an employee retreat that's midway through each year. We talk about it then. We record, you know, anytime we talk about it, we record. We do lunch and learns on occasion. It's recorded. It's put up and emails are sent out. Here's the link. Watch it again. Watch it with your spouse tonight when you get home. Just as many times as you can put it in front of them. And then also just being available to ask questions, because people a lot of times will reach out to Adam directly or they will reach out to Entrust, but we get questions also in our office too. And hey, I've got, you know, maybe I'm going to need to see the doctor. What do you think about this? And so we try to offer, you know, advice a little bit or direct them back to Adam or Entrust in that way. So just as much as, you know, you could back and forth with people, I think.
Okay, great. And then, you know, for the concierge service, did you consider using a third party company? And if not, what was the benefit in keeping it with a traditional TPA for that concierge? Is it a third party or TPA that's doing it? What were the trade-offs there?
Initially, it was a third party. I can talk about this a little bit. We used a third party that was not associated with the TPA, and that was part of the change management tactic. We actually rolled that out quite a few months before we made the plan transition. We told employees how to use the app. We told them to put their medications in there and see if they can find some savings and, you know, ask, you know, to interact with it. And that was when we got a lot of the feedback early on is, holy cow, I was paying all this for my meds and now I can get it for $5 or free. And so people started to feel the value of the change before we even changed from the fully insured health plan. We do now have it all through the TPA. But again, that was just, to Sarah's comment earlier, all these moving pieces and different parties and call this number for this and this number for that. We just wanted to simplify things. And so for us, where Keystone is, this made the most sense.
Yeah, great. The question is, my HR director has been told by our broker, you can't self-insure if you have fewer than 100 employees, which is us. Is there truth to this? No, there's not truth to that. And, you know, certainly, Keystone is well under that, with under 50. Obviously you need to have the self-insurance in place or the stop loss insurance in place. You know, as you get smaller and smaller, like I mentioned earlier, we're seven people. So we're kind of not, you know, we're kind of quasi self-insured. And there's even options, you know, you get quite limited, you know, in your options when you're in the sort of 5 to 20 employees range, but there's even things you can do there. And so certainly reach out to us if you want to understand some of the other options. It's important to understand that the carriers typically make 10 times the margin on fully insured business that they do on self-insured. If it's kind of a pure play self-insured, they're really good at clawing back that margin. That's where you see them tying their, in fact, there was just an article in Bloomberg Law about how a lot of the carriers don't allow you to carve out PBM because there's so much money that can be made in PBMs for them. And that's why they don't allow you to carve out. So they'll kind of do a shell game where they're like, oh, we're going to give you free administration. And they just make it up in the PBM. And there's lots of games that are being played in the PBM arena, from how spread pricing and rebates and there's even like some people think mail order is automatically going to be less expensive That can be true, but what one of the games that's played there is they'll just, it will be mail order, but it'll be more expensive, and they will also just start pumping the medications out, you know, that go unused because they make money when they, you know, have more meds going out. So you have to be careful on those things. So definitely, you know, reach out to us. You know, we can connect you with people like Adam who are very experienced on this. So, you know, it's not a risky endeavor. The next question is, what are some situations that could cause stop loss max to change year over year? So maybe that's a question for you, Adam.
Sure. So, you know, stop loss actuaries and underwriters, they're looking at known risk and unknown risk. And so when they're coming up with what we call attachment points, you know, we would call that like a very high deductible. So an individual, you're self-funding up to, let's say, $50,000 per individual. That's because the underwriters assume that under $50,000 is known risk. So as you go throughout the year and you're seeing your claims data and you're seeing the trends, it may adjust year over year because new conditions can pop up, or you might have some shock claims, or somebody gets prescribed a new very high cost medication. And so, but that's the type of active plan management that we do to say, okay, this is an expensive medication. Are there avenues to get that medication for much less, for cheaper? Are there alternatives? You know, do we need to go to, do we need to have surgery if we can do PT? So there's all kinds of things that we can do mid-year as we're looking at claims data that's going in and out of the plan. Hopefully that helps answer the question.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely one of the areas where, as an organization and community, the Health Rosetta community is started working with some stop loss that know that if these plans are very actively managed, they have the right kind of networks for this, the complex things, specialty drugs, primary care to shepherd this, they will actually, they know that that is lowering their risk. And so they will give credit for that. So there's definitely ways to manage that. Question is, what accounting or banking changes did Keystone need to make to manage the inflows and outflows related to premiums and claims and so on? How did that change?
See, John. I'll field this one. we actually didn't make a huge accounting change at all. What it allowed us to do was we go through a budget process in the fourth quarter of the year for the next year, which lines up nicely with our renewal time. So we were able to budget knowing what our cost is with the bundle, with the stop loss and everything like that. We knew what our cost was going to be. So we didn't have to do any different types of changes. With our third party administrator, they handle all of the benefits claims and everything like that. So we don't have to worry about much of it. So it's very nice.
Great. As we're winding down, I'm going to combine a couple questions. We'll kind of do lightning round. So has there been an impact on turnover, recruitment, retention of talent? And for the HR team, how much additional work has been created for you, Sarah, or anybody else?
Really not any additional work more than we've normally done. I feel like I could, maybe we sat down and looked at the reports a little bit, just trying to guess where we were going to be at in the upcoming months. But we haven't had any, once we signed all the paperwork, it's pretty much been easy, smooth sailing for us. So not too much extra at all.
And retention, recruitment, you know, any of that, any impact, good or bad?
Not really. I feel like the majority of the employees don't feel a whole lot of change other than, you know, just excitement maybe if they've used one of these plans and paid less than they thought. But other than that, it's pretty much, you know, they've got their insurance card, they've got their number to call, they kind of know what they're doing now.
Yeah, great. And kind of related to that, what I can tell you is it is more work for the benefits consultant. So Adam has probably been buffering you. And kind of a related question that somebody has is, you know, typically, you know, in a fully insured scenario, the broker might get paid a 4% commission. How does, you know, Adam, how do you charge for your services? There is a truly additional work for you. It's pretty simple, you know, to just be out there as a sales agent for big carriers. So how has that changed how you get paid?
Sure. We have completely pulled our fee out of the premium equation. It is not a percentage of what Keystone pays in premium or any way tied to the cost of their plan. It's a fixed fee. We're fully upfront and transparent about our fee. We do collect it through the TPA just out of convenience for Keystone, because it's one bill to pay, but it is a separate line item, and it's just a fixed flat fee.
Yeah, I mean, one thing I would encourage people, whether it's in the appendix of my books, which we have a link for a free download of that, it's also on our site. We have a plan sponsor bill of rights, we have an advisor code of conduct, and we also have a advisor disclosure form. And this is something that I would encourage you to take those. And if you get pushback, you know, on those, that's very telling. You know, you get tap dancing. And but when you have a properly aligned benefits advisor, you know, they embrace that. They are professionals, they're consultants themselves. And, you know, if somebody's trying to hide what they're getting paid, that probably is all you need to know. And unfortunately, we've seen up to 17 undisclosed revenue streams that the employers were not aware of. A lot of them are not account specific. So they might get paid on retaining 90% of the business year over year from a carrier, and then they'll get a very significant bonus that might be 30% or more of their overall compensation. So they will say they're shopping the plan, but they have a strong disincentive to do that. So a whole lot of detail in the book about how that works. But the last question that we have was, how many states are your employees located in? We've got employees in 42 states and under 250 are benefit eligible.
Let's see, we have got employees mostly in Missouri, and then we also have Illinois, Wisconsin, and Texas. So we're in four different states. And I'm sorry, was there a second part to the question?
They were just saying how big they were. So yeah, I mean, what we've seen, you know, one of the recent case studies that we have shared, and there was a webinar that I encourage people to go back and watch that has a CFO of a company based in Great Falls, Montana. They're bigger. They were like 700 plus employees, nine or 10 states, I think about 50 locations, and they saw their benefits spending 4 years ago was $8 million. Last year it closed out at $3.4 million, and benefits improved during that time. They have been at it for a while. They're a little bigger. They have over 5,000 direct contracts now. So it shows you, you know, the sort of journey people can be on. They can continue to ratchet down. In their case, you know, manufacturer, very low margin business. They're about a $200 million a year revenue company. They would have had to increase their sales revenue like $40, $50 million to have the same impact on their profits. So that definitely got their attention. And so, you know, there's lots of different examples like that. We've seen this type of success every corner of the country, rural, urban, small companies, larger companies, private employers, public employers. We haven't seen a place it can't be done. It just takes the sort of will that John and Sarah have to be educated and work this through and have a partnership with the right sort of benefits consultant like Adam. So we encourage people to fire any questions our way offline. Unfortunately, we want to be respectful of everybody's time here. And we've run out of time. I know there's a couple more questions. So please email us, call us, whatever. We're happy to answer any of your questions. And John and Sarah, I really appreciate your time. And Adam, thank you for joining us, as well as the work you've done for them and the work you're doing. And, you know, I was just watching your video yesterday on the education series that you've been doing in the St. Louis area, which is phenomenal. I know you do those three or four times a year. And so if you're anywhere near St. Louis, do that. I know a lot of other advisors are doing that type of thing. It's, you know, in a low-key environment, non-salesy. And you know, the beauty of this is if you give people information, they'll want to do it. There is a great level of dissatisfaction with how health benefits have gone. So again, thank you everybody for your time. We'll look forward to you on a future webinar and connect with us online. As I said, with that, we had that URL, healthrosetta.org/friends. You can download the books free. Feel free to share that. We just want to get this word out there. And fortunately, there's a lot of people doing the sort of great work that Sarah and John are doing and being supported by Adam. So thanks again for your time, and look forward to you in a future webinar.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.